Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. This is where Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi bring you the latest news and information on pro wrestling and MMA, as well as interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap with your hosts, Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi.
All right, welcome to Ringside Wrap, September something, 8th, maybe? Yeah, September 8th. Welcome to the show. Sorry we missed last week. Work called, and on top of that, we had a little, Mike kind of wussing out on us, something to do with a hurricane that never happened.
Hey, well, actually, you know, that was for real-life business purposes, as, the threat of a hurricane always brings hurricane parties. And people like to drink their hurricanes away. So, between that and batting down the hatches for something I should not have been scared of, because unless it's like, you know, Earl McCready, I don't know how I could have been scared of anything named Earl. Earl Campbell, maybe, yes. If Earl Campbell was coming at me at 100 miles an hour, that would scare me, but I should never have been scared of Hurricane Earl.
There you go. You know, it's funny, because I've always had a thing for weather. I always wanted to be a storm chaser, and every time something like this comes up, I'm watching the Weather Channel and waiting to see what Jim Cantore's up to. And of course, he heads to the Outer Banks, and he's right there waiting at the perfect place. And of course, it just kind of turned away from him, so didn't get to see him at his best. But great coverage and great photos. I saw all two or three days last week. It's always cool stuff. Of course, it's always bad for the people who live there, I suppose.
Now, you see, I always find that to be stupid. Now, I can't say anything because I have, no problem jumping out of a plane. But, at this age of technology, you can just put, like, remote cameras down there. And, I don't think I need to see Jim Cantore killed. Although it would be great for the Weather Channel's ratings. Now that they play movies and everything else. But I don't think I need to see him down there anymore.
Cantore's the man. Love seeing him doing that stuff. Les, how you doing tonight?
I'm hanging there. What are you guys talking about?
Talking about Jim Cantore and his crazy hurricane footage from the Weather Channel, and how Mike was dodging a bullet last week. So it's kind of starting.
Oh yeah, okay. So you were in the midst of all that, were you, Michael?
Yes, I was on the Delmarva Peninsula, so there was the real possibility that thing was going to turn. Plus, I have an EMT that I work with, a guy who works as a part-time or volunteer EMT and a volunteer firefighter, and does FEMA work. So, of course, he had his, National Weather Service, National Hurricane Center, worst-case doomsday scenarios, which also helped to scare all of us, and the possibility that the cold front wouldn't move in and knock this thing out. But luckily dodged a bullet on that one, and then the three following it as well.
All right. No, I'm not a big fan of the Weather Channel. I mean, I check it sometimes when I'm at a hotel to see what my flight home is going to be like, or my flight out is going to be like. But this guy, he gets out in the nasty weather. Is that it? The eye of the hurricane? Is he the Geraldo Rivera of this particular?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. He's crazy, and just always fun to watch him.
I always question that. When I say I always question that, it's like, okay, so you're stupid enough to be standing out in the eye of the hurricane. All right, and it's wet, and the wind's blowing. I mean, it's pretty much just stock footage, and I don't mean to make it trivial, because it's obviously not, but, I think weather is just, they beat you to death with it now, and it's kind of the same loop over and over again, is it not?
Yeah, probably.
But if you enjoy it for a thing, hey, whatever. I want some grass grow myself.
Yeah, so anyway, Mike, you dodged a bullet, I suppose. And how long has it been since one's come up the coast? I can't remember the last one that came up the coast.
Oh, God. We had one in 2003, I think it was. But that one, actually, as bad as it was down here, we've had nor'easters that are far worse than that one. The deal with that one was it spun up the Chesapeake Bay and just completely rocked Baltimore and just flooded out Fells Point and just was an absolute nightmare for going up into Chesapeake Bay. We on the coast actually dodged that bullet. It's been a good deal of time since we've had one, which is, that's the biggest problem, is we're due for a bad one to actually come up here and smack us pretty hard, and it was supposed to be a bad hurricane season anyway, so boo to that.
Well, all right, I'm sure there's been some wrestling this past week. Unfortunately, I forgot that it was Monday until it was Tuesday, so totally missed Raw.
That means you still got your NXT in, though.
What's that?
You still got your NXT in then, though, right?
No. I quit on that a long time ago, and I quit on TNA a long time ago. So the only thing I've really been watching was Raw and SmackDown, and I haven't seen SmackDown in a few weeks. And Raw, it was like literally Tuesday night I'm going to turn it on, and I realized it's Tuesday night.
Okay.
I love those three-day holidays, man.
Did either one of you see the TNA pay-per-view?
No.
No.
Oh, don't worry. I saw it for you. You know.
Yeah, I heard the finish to the main event wasn't very satisfying.
Well, that was one of the big problems. It wasn't the main event. It was the semi-main event. They expected Anderson and Pope to follow Angle and Hardy, and the biggest, really good match. It was Kurt Angle and Jeff Hardy when he's looking good. So it was a very good match, but. You know, they've not wanted the pure sports build. So to do a MMA boxing style ending, which has been done in wrestling a million times before too, most notably in Maryland, because you can get away with it with the Maryland Athletic Commission, or at least try to get away with it. They've done that a bunch of times there. But, you've denied that part of what you want to be. So to do it then was a waste. How they did it was a waste in that, I just didn't understand why they didn't have Angle either get busted open with a deep gusher, right? But, well, first of all, they should have said it was a 20-minute time limit being the match. They didn't have to. All they had to do was say it. It could have been a throwaway thing, but they should have said it, because when the thing ended, it was goofy with Bischoff coming out there and saying, now 5 more minutes, and now all of a sudden you got it up on the big screen. But Angle, and I'm not, advocating a Eddie Guerrero JBL style of bloodbath, but if you're going to do that kind of ending, you got to get it in. It's got to be a pretty good gusher. When you're wiping it off, it's still got to come back again, because that looks stupid, especially because they haven't been afraid of the blade in TNA. So that was goofy. The Angle really should have went to work on Hardy's leg in that first bonus period, because, and he did, but it wasn't driven home enough where Hardy was going to have to, not be able to continue because of pain, or he was going to have to tap out. And Angle should have been pouring blood then start the second overtime, and that ending would have made more, a lot more sense. It was a bad ending to, and the show was what it was. There's no point in ripping it to shreds. It just, you don't have to. Sabu and Douglas Williams was, it was in a way fun for what it was, but it's not going to go down the annals of wrestling history or anything like that, and it doesn't do a whole lot to super benefit TNA, except it makes people happy because they still like Sabu. But, it was the best thing to that point, and you were feeling good pretty much about the pay-per-view, even though it wasn't great. You had to have some appreciation for it, and that really hurt it. And then you follow it up with Anderson and Pope, and I know what they were thinking, obviously, was, you can't send them home with a finish like that. People like both the Pope and Anderson, you'll send them away happy with one of those guys winning. Yeah, that was great, except for they couldn't follow Anderson or Angle and Hardy. And really, if they didn't do what they do all the time, which is have their pay-per-views build up their television, they could have left a cliffhanger on this one. But they've done it so many times before, to do that would have been a mistake. But this was one of those times where they could have done it. As dumb as that sounds, it was almost like WWE last time around with Fatal 4-Way, but with Money in the Bank, which basically led up to NXT the next night. What were they going to do, and what happens on Raw the next night? They could have been able to do that, especially because they're not on TV this week, and they wanted a big cliffhanger coming up for 2 weeks from now. So they just the whole thing ended up being just, very TNA, unfortunately, and just kind of left a bad taste in my mouth.
Well, those four guys, to me, looking at it from a wrestling perspective, there's only one of the four guys that jumps out off the page of me as should be my champion, And that's not, I mean, talent obviously comes into play, but in this case, not so much talent, but the actual persona of that particular character, and that would be Angle. You know, Jeff has his appeal to the girls and so forth. Kennedy has become too much of a character, and the Pope is the Pope. That kind of the self-explanatory, you know, and you need to groom, I think, more guys. You know, to me, that the guy in that role needs to be versatile and be able to work different styles, you know, and adjust and make a better match out of a guy, you know, that may not be, you know, two guys whose styles are going to mesh. But anyway, yeah, I knew on Thursday night when the size of Nigel's manhood became an issue that this pay-per-view wasn't going to be too serious. And you guys must have missed that.
Yeah, thankfully I did. Luckily I did miss that, and I guess I could bring that up for a minute, too. It looks like the Young Bucks are...
Oh, there's a pun if I ever heard one.
The Young Bucks the Jacksons, whatever their name is in TNA, I guess, are taking the place of Brutus Magnus and Desmond Wolfe in this little feud with the Motor City Machine Guns, which is highly, highly disappointing. Nothing against the Young Bucks or anything like that, but, you know, to be taken from Nigel because of something Brutus Magnus did, I guess, is disappointing. I guess it's something we're going to have to wait on.
Yeah, has anybody heard what happened there?
I'm not sure, and I'm not sure if Meltzer and Alvarez have had a chance to talk about it yet. I don't think they have. It just know it's got apparently something to do with Brutus Magnus.
Yeah, he wasn't there, right? I mean, that's from what I heard, anyway.
Yeah, and he wasn't there, but Nigel was. So, yeah, and again, just disappointing with you, and nothing against it. Really, obviously, Brutus Magnus being paired with Desmond Wolfe is going to make him far, far better. But obviously, Desmond Wolfe, you know, really should be in that mix. You look at Daniel Bryan, you know, can be, and obviously, a lot of people have bitched and moaned about Daniel Bryan, but I think it's been a, you know, pretty clear thing that he was going to win the U.S. title because Miz is going on to do other things anyway. But you see where he's positioned right now as compared to Nigel and Samoa Joe, and you really got to scratch your head.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I won't disagree with that. I won't disagree with that. It's it is what it is, as they say, right? And I'm like Richwood Neck. When you know that Vicky Guerrero is a pro, to teach what, I'm not exactly sure. And I mean that in real life, and no disrespect to Eddie's widow, but I mean, character-wise, it doesn't even fit, and it's obvious that the show's going to be. And what, I guess, Tuesday night they danced.
Yes, they did.
Okay, we'll see. Then something good came out of this.
Did they really? Well,
auditioning for Dancing with the Stars.
Did they really dance, or are we using that term loosely here?
Probably loosely, I would guess.
Yeah.
I was in an extra good mood, so throw wrestling completely out the window. I mean, it should have been pretty obvious for when they announced this. I mean, more so than ever with this show, what it is. But it was perversely entertaining in that you could not believe what was actually going on. If you'd never done drugs before, you think you were on them watching that show. The way they were trotted out there. Now, apparently, this girl Naomi, who used to be the Orlando cheerleader, she actually won all the little dumb competition things they had and actually looks like a legitimate athlete and looks like she's going to walk away with this thing very easily. The rest of the girls obviously were, you know, ready for the Playboy shoot, which is exactly what they want, but it was so bad. Like, the match, Alicia Fox and Kelly seemed to mess up a spot, and the referee counted three. The girls, who obviously don't know what they're doing, you know, this is why WWE wants them, apparently, don't know what they're doing, continue on with what I guess the finish of the match was supposed to be. And it was just absolutely surreal. I mean, just the entire thing was absolutely surreal.
Wow. Well, it's off to a good start then, right?
I just absolutely mind-numbing.
You know what? It's to me, if they're selling it as like, what is it, the Bad Girls Club or you know, the Bachelor Pad, I mean, you know, obviously it's not, you know, Bachelorette Pad in this case. I mean, if they're selling it as just a, you know, or the Jersey, their version of the Jersey Shore is the all-girl cast or whatever. But as long as they're not selling it as wrestling, you know, I'm even cool with if they make ratings on the damn thing, you know. But I mean, that they're more, it's more important the, you know, the way you look and carry yourself and stuff like that. And legitimately to kind of see what the hell, some of the, you know, some of these girls aren't very athletic, and what would be entertaining, I think, and interesting is to see them taking bad bumps. And I don't mean to go out and do it on purpose, but just watching the you know, the process and trying to teach them.
Unless that's where, you know what, and they have the NBC synergy, and people have talked about, will NXT end up on Bravo? To be honest, if you actually added in a reality show feel to this thing and actually showed them with each other behind the scenes and trying to learn and being bitchy and being catty, this is actually would be perfect for, you know, another season actually with their girls, because it's not presented as wrestling. I mean, it was basically stand-up comedy all night last night, because what are you, I mean, there was one girl, and they obviously know this. It's lame duck show anyway. You know, they're not doing a cut for 4 weeks, so obviously they're going to drag this out before SmackDown ends up on Sci-Fi. But frankly, if they actually had tweaked this and decided to wait till fall and got this thing on Bravo or even left it on there, it probably would not have been all that bad of an idea.
No, really.
Because it's the E part. I mean, it's WWE, so as far as the E part of it goes, no wrestling involved in this at all with their crossover wannabe sort of stuff, it would fit perfectly.
Yeah. Well, see, and I'm cool with that, you know, and if you're going to show the wrestling all the way to the background, shove it there. And that's part of their, you know, and part of their job is to learn to wrestle, and how many of them can't or are uncomfortable with it or grumbling under their breath in the back, you know. I mean, I remember, and I won't mention names because I don't want to embarrass anybody, but I remember, you know, back with the company and going to Raw and then doing the afternoon practices, and you see some of the girls that Finley had to work with or any of the guys that happened to work with them, and he just knew it wasn't a labor of love, right? I mean, it was like, oh, my God, I got to go through this, but this is what it takes to get a paycheck, you know? And even their perspective, because, again, that in reality has got more human interest value and is more entertaining than the silliness that they do.
Yeah, and you know, the girls scare the hell out of me anyway. Even the quote-unquote current divas, just the neck breakers and widow's peaks. And, you know, it's dumb as it sounds. I mean, because they have to be on there. It's a part of what WWE does anyway, and I get paid to watch, so yeah, I'm going to have to watch it anyway. I don't really want to see these girls take bumps or anything anyway. I'd rather see, honestly, when it comes to this, just the personality stuff. Because
well, you
know, they've been so bastardized now, they have no intention on signing any girls that they should, that would make these girls better. You don't have to focus on them. You can still do Playboy. You can still have, you know, your extra pretty ones and your showpieces be the Divas champion. But you need somebody else for these girls to actually wrestle and to look better, too.
Yeah, I agree. And like you said, you know, it's what's really happening, so it's easier to film. And like I say, probably in a big percentage of the time, more entertaining because of it's being reality-based than the stupid things that some of those writers are putting in these girls' mouths.
I mean, Vicky Guerrero last night, it is going to be the Vicky Guerrero show, too, just because it's, she's got her pro. It was supposed to be the 7-foot-tall or whatever it was, an Amazonian Florida girl. I guess she was so bad, she couldn't be on. So they replaced her with this fitness model that she just is now going to beat up and pretty much torture. And it's the Vicky screaming show as well. So, for some reason, even though she's such a cartoon character, I have no problem with Vicky just making money.
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, I think you're going to, you know, that If you strictly stick to a formatted scripted show, you're going to pretty much pull a lot of these girls out, or guys, if you're even doing with the male populace of the roster, the fact they can't act and they're bad actors, and you're going to tune that out because there is no wrestling to offset that. You know, I mean, you know, to give you a break from that. Where with the reality thing, win, lose, or draw, at least it comes across as natural.
Yeah, because they're filling in with comedy right now, which, you know, it's almost like the show was being done for the people backstage more than anything. I mean, that's how lame duck the show feels, and that's how just ridiculous it is from the start. So, I mean, I don't know if they want to play into that camp or not, you know, and go too over the top with it, but in a way, it would make the most sense and save wrestling, you know, with dignity it has by just turning it into a yee-haw show.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that would...
Which just insulted Rich Tate, who loved yee-haw and loved Porter Wagner, that used to come on the block with it.
Hey, you making fun of me?
Porter Wagner. Okay, I got you. All right, for those who are young, Porter Wagner is the best.
What was wrong with Porter Wagner?
Nothing. No, he did. Porter Wagner, the man with the suits that would make your black and white color.
You got it. You know, he led a lot of blind people through the dark. And you know, without him, we wouldn't have Dolly Parton.
I was going to say, because I'd love to feel Braille with Dolly Parton.
Oh my God. Oh, I'm hanging up. You guys are. All right. Okay.
Oh, go ahead.
On a more serious note, I just wanted to mention, because we didn't do anything last week, a very interesting, I think, and actually disturbing in a way, this thing that happened to me. One of the kids that I trained years ago, he's not a kid by any stretch, a kid to me, but I mean, he's in his 30s. Called me, and he knew Luna Vachon and the Bailey kid, you know, who I never got. He wasn't around Philly when I was up there. I may have met him briefly, but I don't think so, down around Kentucky. But anyway, he called me and asked me if I had a few minutes to talk, and I said, sure. And so it just, that's what he called to talk about, was he's, you know, and he was so emotionally touched by this whole thing that he broke down crying on the phone, you know, and trying to say, you know, basically say, well, what are they doing? You know, why is this happening? And I thought, wow, man, you know, it's that kind of graphically showed me, you know, what effect this has on, you know, we talk about some of the younger people that just figure, well, they're going to go on and do it anyway, you know, that some of the people have, you know, I guess here a wake-up call, and I told him, I said, you know, don't let this touch you so much emotionally that it's going to lead you down the same path, you know, as a way of getting free of it for a while. I said, because, you know, and he looked for answers. I don't guess there really are any. You know, the people that give you the answers are the people that are gone. You know,
right.
They're the only one to legitimately know why they, you know, why it happened or why they allowed it to escalate to the level it did. So. And then I'm hearing with the Bailey kid, although he'd just been out of rehab a few days, actually he had an aneurysm, which I don't know if it's related to what, I'm not sure what he was rehabbing for or what he did or anything else, so I don't know. But anyway, he was, my God, dude, you know, the young, in their 20s, I mean, they're just beginning to live.
You know, along that same line of thought, I mean, obviously, you know, we've been talking recently about wrestling too, and if you could just kind of update the listeners on whatever the latest is that you've heard, and also Tony Bourne passed away since the last show, and I wanted to talk and see if you had ever worked with him.
Sure did. When I early in my career, I worked with Tony, but yeah, I talked to two yesterday. He was actually at the doctor's. He's staying with friends. He's out of the hospital. And, you know, he said, you know, he's up and he's down. I mean, at this point, anybody would be, you know. He said, there's times I just feel really good, and then I kind of feel a little weak. And I said, well, that's going to, you know, it's going to come with time. So Yeah, so anyway, he's staying with friends and seeing a doctor, and he said they gave him a big book, so it's just, you know, about the rehab and the do's and the don'ts, and he can't pick up anything heavier than 10 pounds. And so anyway, he's coming along, you know, steady as she goes, steady as she goes. So, yeah, I worked with Tony back, I think it was probably 62 or 63, and he came into Indianapolis with Leo the Lion Newman as his manager. For those who don't know, Leo was a generation of wrestler before Tony Bourne, who turned into manager. But, yeah, I worked with him in Indianapolis on several occasions and learned from him. Nice guy, good worker. Well, he and Leo both, you know, were good to learn from. I told somebody that one of the strongest memories of that whole situation was I worked with him on Indianapolis television, and they asked me to get a little color, and it was studio, and there was no security railing or rope or anything, and the fans were seated on the one side of the ring where this had to take place, maybe just four feet from the actual apron, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, long story short, the manager Leo Newman's on the outside, and he draws my attention and my ire, and I go out on the apron and take a swipe at him, and he's kind of, you know, he backs off and puts his cane up as for protection. So anyway, as I turn back to the ring, Tony's right behind me. He nails me and posts me up, and I hit the post head on. And when I go down, I've got to take the bump so that I can come down and get my head under the apron so I can do my little job. So anyway, as I get in that position and put the blade in, a good Samaritan at ringside takes the elbow of the hand the blade's in and goes to help me up. And pulls that arm that I just start to cut myself with. So it laid me open pretty good. And I knew when I came up and saw the look on Leo's face that it was coming pretty good. And so anyway, I got up on the apron, and Tony nails me and brings me in over the top and slams me, and then he goes to the top rope. He did the Ray Stevens bombs away finish. And anyway, hit me with the bombs away and covered me and got the count, and they leave me laying, of course, and the referee's supposed to sort of revive me and help me to the back. And he's standing over me. What I don't know is my heart's beating at the rate that it's pumping the clot. The blood's trying to clot in the cut, but it's pumping out, the clot's out. And the referee had a weak stomach, and he was afraid he was going to get sick. And he walked out of the ring and left me laying. So here I am with the clock ticking. I can't get up and walk out. And Les Ruffin was running the dressing room in the back, and he's freaking out back there. So anyway, they finally had to send a couple of baby faces out to get me out of the ring. But that happened with Tough Tony. He was, like I say, he was a nice guy, easy to work with, a real gentleman. So was Leo. They were helpful, you know, and they'd talk to me before a match and then critique it for me after. And, you know, it's, what little time I spent around him was seemed like a real good guy.
Now, he ended up being kind of a mainstay, I guess, in the Northwest, really. That's a territory I've never heard you talk about. Did you ever get up there?
No, I never did. And it was a junior heavyweight territory. It just never came up. I think a couple people opened that door for me, that I'd worked with in other places, and then they went up there. And it's just never, Well, once I came south in 66 to Atlanta, and then I had Atlanta, Mobile, Louisiana, Nashville, Charlotte, Tampa, all an easy move. And in the winter months, even if the weather got, a little bad, usually nothing got snowed out where if you went further north, that was the case. Of course, Portland wouldn't have been that way, the Portland territory. But, so I just, I thought this is, as long as I was making decent money and, the moves were easy and it was a familiar circuit, as it were. So I never left down there for any reason that I could think of. So, you know, after 66, that was, with the exception, I went to Canada in 1970 for Rudy Kay.
Yeah.
Yeah, other than that, I never, you know, but no, I never worked Portland. Like I say, the door had been open for me, but I just, it never came up. It was a good little territory.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, I just, for some reason, it never occurred to me to actually ask you, had you ever worked that territory? Because, you know, as you said, it would have been the perfect place for a guy your size. I mean,
yeah.
based on the way they did things up there. And, you know, I've always heard good things, I guess, about, you know, the people that ran
yeah.
the company there. I mean,
well, worked all, you know, worked the Calgary territory, which, of course, is, you know, north of that into
mm-hmm.
Canada, and came down into Montana. You know, for a shot here and there, but never got to Portland. And as far as in terms of going west, Phoenix territory was.
So you never did anything with L.A. or San Francisco?
No. There were times that I could have, but you know, it just again, the timing wasn't right. Early '60s, I had a chance to go out there, and then. I forget the second time. And well, I guess I could have called, you know, and looked into it at any point. Almost went to Frisco once. Bobby Shane and I talked about doing the Shane Brothers for Shires in Frisco. Bobby had been out there as single. And a lot of people took him for me or me for him at times. And so we worked some tag matches in Tennessee. And anyway, we talked about going out for Shires. But anyway, at the time, Roy was the tag team poor and had more teams than he needed. So at that point, he wasn't interested. We were both ready to make a move. So, I went to Charlotte, and he went, I forget where Bobby went at the time. But anyway, that was the only times. But that again, it was my choice. You know, I just, the timing wasn't right, and when it was open, the door was open there, I was doing decent somewhere else and didn't want to break the string, you know, so.
And, of course, you could have single-handedly saved the L.A. office, you know.
Yeah.
They totally missed the boat there.
What are you smoking? Where can I get a pound?
You could have carried the mummy to great matches.
Yeah.
You know, Garibaldi booked out there for a while. In fact, when I was helping with the office in Knoxville with Fuller, Leo called me and said, "Hey, I got a kid here who's got a lot of talent. He's a good worker. He's not a great worker, but he's got a great gift for gab and does tremendous promos, interviews. But I need to move him. I don't want to burn him out, and we're looking for a place for him to go." And at the time, Knoxville was red hot, probably the hottest little territory in the country, and had guys waiting to come in. You know, there was a laundry list, and people wanted to come in and work territory because it was good money and short trips.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I said, "Well, Leo, I'll get back to you." And so I called Ron, and I, you know, he said, "I just don't see, can't see a way clear right now." And I called Leo back, and I said, "Well, we can't swing it right now. Would like to do it, but can't." And so he gave Roddy Piper to somebody else. Or otherwise, he might have been in Knoxville with that crew we had in there, which would have been good for us, obviously, and good for him because there's a lot of good guys there to work with at one time.
Absolutely. Hey, Mike, I know you're chomping at the bit to talk a little Ring of Honor so we can actually talk about some good wrestling for a while.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, again, one of the best values in wrestling is going to happen again this weekend, Saturday, September 11th. They have their Go Fight Live internet pay per view, which I believe is what, like $14.95, whatever it is. It's more than well worth it every time out, and you can actually order it through the website GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com because we could use your money, and why not? If you're going to get it, you might as well get it through us anyway. So. The main event, Kings of Wrestling, Claudio and Chris Hero, who, lucky for everybody, just re-upped the deal for at least a year, I think it is, with Ring of Honor, so we're going to get Kings of Wrestling for at least another year there That's fantastic. And then Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin making their first appearance as a team in a long time, I believe, and get to work for Ring of Honor. I think they're both working in Puerto Rico right now. At least Shelton Benjamin is working for WWC in Puerto Rico on a regular basis now. But this is a non-title match. It's the main event. I can't believe that it will not be good. And I'm going to assume because it is a non-title match, and it just would make sense because it seems to be that the Briscoes are kind of tied up with the All Night Express, Kenny King, and Rhett Titus right now, that this is going to continue on to at least the next pay-per-view, and I think that would be a good idea. The big quote-unquote Ring of Honor match on the show is not the world title match between Roderick Strong and Tyler Black, and I'll get to that in a minute, but it's the double chain match between Colt Cabana and El Generico against Kevin Steen and Steve Corino, all four of which have been fantastic in a feud now that's going on. I think it's the ninth month now. And it's still, you know, it's still exciting. It's still something people want to see. There's been good twists and turns. The addition of Cabana and Corino to the mix have been just absolutely fantastic and have really helped out, especially on Kevin Steen's side. And obviously Colt Cabana being the mouthpiece for El Generico is great. And a double chain throwback sort of match, and that ought to be great there. Then there is Tyler Black, who has got his WWE contract. So everybody, you know, every time he steps into the ring now, one, you can watch his see how he's improving and to see how he looks. And also, you know, you're wondering when he's going to drop the title. And Ring of Honor has always done some interesting things. They did it with CM Punk and with JB Noble, and I believe a couple other cases as well, where the guy that was signed to the WWE contract doesn't necessarily, you know, drop the belt right away or drop the belt when you expect it. They try to draw it out a little bit, and I think they'll do so again here, even though Terry Funk will be the ringside vigilante for this last. You should actually be up there to interfere on behalf of Tyler Black if Terry Funk gets in the way for Roderick Strong or something.
There you go.
All right, give me a payday, Mike. I like
that. Austin Aries and Christopher Daniels, which has got to be great. Eddie Edwards and Sean Daivari for the ROH TV title. And then singles matches with the Briscoes and the All Night Express. And I guess the opening match, Eric Stevens and the Necro Butcher, because you got to have the Necro Butcher on there, against Grizzly Redwood and the dreaded TVA. So we'll see how that goes, but you know, the TV is always good every single week, Ring of Honor. If you can't catch it on HDNet, if you don't have it, you know, there's other ways to see it. They put it up on YouTube. They have an application now for iPads and next-generation iPods. So they've done their work to actually get themselves out there and give you other ways to try to watch them. And it's almost always worth your time to watch them anyway, and certainly worth the money especially when you compare it to, you know, $45 for WWE pay-per-views and 35 or whatever it is now for TNA pay-per-views. I mean, the money spent, you know, under $20 is just usually well worth it for Ring of Honor.
We didn't get a chance at all after UFC 118 to recap the show, but your thoughts on it?
Well, it was my son is screaming in the background because I guess he doesn't want to go to bed. It was a disappointment just because I wanted to get up there for the show, and there was a lot of hype around it, and I swear that Cale Sonnen and Anderson Silva really stole a lot of the thunder away, and even though it didn't do the pay-per-view buys, that it, you know, a lot of the hype kind of led us to believe it did. It really, just the show from top to bottom was far more exciting than this one ended up, you know, being. It was really flat. The Spike TV card was saved by Joe Lozon, who got that submission in 2 minutes over Gabe Rudiger, and he just completely barreled him over and was such a huge, you know, being from Massachusetts, he was such a hometown hero. You know, that was awesome, and, you know, it gave you some hope leading into the show, but it was, you know, really disappointing. Gray Maynard, he's a great wrestler, but Gray Maynard is just like, I'm brain locking right now, John Fitch at 170 pounds, who is, you know, by all reality should have already gotten his second fight against George St. Pierre, concerning how many fights he's won, but he's incredibly boring. He knows he's boring. It's when wrestling goes bad, It's incredibly effective, but when that's all you do, it makes for horrendous fights. And Kenny Florian, who I thought was going to be more popular up there, and I really thought was going to be utilized more by the UFC hype machine and media machine up in his hometown, especially a guy who was, you know, from Peruvian ancestry and can speak two languages very fluently, I thought he'd really be trotted out there a little bit more. Plus, he's on ESPN's MMA Live as well, but didn't utilize him like I thought they should have, but he looked very flat, and Gray Maynard is hard to look good against, and just like John Fitch, he's due for a fight against Frankie Edgar. He's already beaten Frankie Edgar, did it a couple years ago. Now, Frankie Edgar is not the same fighter again, and I don't think he's gotten enough credit at all coming out of this fight. I mean, Frankie Edgar, just, BJ Penn's not done. BJ Penn is still the second best guy in that division. I still think he beats, you know, Gray Maynard, to be honest, but, you know, Frankie just gives him fits. Frankie is such a great wrestler, and he is, you know, his jiu-jitsu is far better now than it was when he first started. I mean, with all of his training with Henzo, I mean, his feet, he never stops moving. He's in perpetual motion, but it's always good motion. You know, kind of like the Diaz brothers where, you know, it doesn't look all that pretty or effective sometimes, but it really does work. And he's just not getting enough credit coming out of this show, and it's really, really disappointing and unfortunate because he's somebody the UFC really can build around. He's not, you know, super bombastic or anything like that, but he's a great champion, I think a great representative for the company, and realistically they're going to need to hype him up because it's not like Gray Maynard's going to be knocking him dead in the lead-up coming up to, you know, two guys who realistically should be main eventing a pay-per-view, and you got to wonder how many binds it would do in its current state right now. And then Randy Couture and James Toney, well, you know, it was exactly what everyone thought it would be. And just realistically, you knew because of the way, you know, Toney can cut some good promos, but one of his charms in boxing has always been you never understand what he's saying. You know, he didn't look good, obviously, weight-wise coming into this. He wasn't training with top teams. So knowing all of that going in, you knew it was going to be anticlimactic, and realistically, Randy Couture did the very right thing by basically slithering in there, grabbing onto his foot. You know, boom, down falls James Toney. Couture gets on top. He's got a chance to try and move. The arm triangle choke, couldn't get it, you know, so he just calmly put it on again because what could James Toney do? He was just flopping around there on his back with Couture on top of him. So just a really anticlimactic show and very disappointing and, you know, not good because they're leading into a show. Hopefully this did, you know, pretty good pay-per-view buys. It's apparently sounding like it was a little bit disappointing, but, you know, they got a UFC 119 show coming up here in Indianapolis that just flat doesn't look good at all, and it was looked at to do poor numbers anyway. With, you know, it was both Nogueira brothers in the two main event spots, and Antonio Rogério Nogueira against Ryan Bader, which, you know, It's a very interesting match. It shouldn't be a semi-main event, I don't believe, with as weak as this card is on a pay-per-view. And then the main event was supposed to be Frank Mir coming back after being obliterated by Shane Carwin in New Jersey against Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira, who was obliterated by Cain Velasquez in Sydney, Australia in February. So it was a comeback match for both guys. It was a rematch of a bout that they had where Nogueira had been sickened and put on a hell of a performance, even though he'd been sickened with a staph infection. So it's now Nogueira having to pull out of this match because of surgery for a degenerative hip injury. Mirko Krokop steps in, and it's a lot more fun, but, you know, it's not going to be that great of a fight.
Anything on next week's fight night that looks interesting to you? Of course, that taking place 1 week from tonight.
No, the Nate Marquardt, Rustemar Poláriz fight, you know, the most intriguing thing, obviously, is the Ultimate Fighter show that comes on after GSP, Team GSP against Team Koscheck. Obviously, Jeff Koscheck is very good. Obviously, he was a one-dimensional wrestler when he came up initially on the Ultimate Fighter show and has developed into a great fighter. You know, hard-headed sometimes in the fact that he wants to go out there and swing. And sometimes leaves himself out there for bad spots. But he's a really exciting fighter. He's got a mouth on him. He's an exciting guy to watch. And obviously, you know, more people want to see GSP and Koscheck again than they want to see GSP and Fitch, or want to see, you know, or Fitch and Koscheck, who, you know, if Koscheck wins this fight, that's an interesting quandary, too, because Dana White says he's got to fight his teammate. John Fitch, even though they really just don't want to do it, they're going to have to fight, which, you know, would at least lead to some intrigue, although I think realistically if Koscheck beats GSP, we're going to see Koscheck GSP 3 as soon as humanly possible, I would assume. But, you know, that's the most interesting part of the night for me. Mark Barton Polares, I mean, it's a big fight for Polares, who fights for the Brazilian top team. He's been on a good winning streak anyway, beat Thomas Dallal. I got a chance to see that in New Jersey with a heel hook. Unfortunately, he left that heel hook on for way too long. It was actually suspended for 90 days, really pissing off Dana White. So if any stupidity happens in this fight, you know, Polaris is going to be on a fast track out of the UFC, because that's one thing the UFC has been pretty good about. They don't put up for that kind of nonsense for too long. Lightweight contender Jim Miller out of New Jersey, and it seems like everybody's coming out of New Jersey, is fighting Gleison Tebow, and which would be a pretty good fight. And Efren Escudero, who I like a lot, who's the young Mexican kid who, you know, lost to Evan Dunham a couple fights ago, came back and beat Dan Lozon with a decision. You know, kind of a key fight for him against Charles Oliveira, and a key fight for both of them to see how they're going to continue on here in the 155-pound class.
Stepping back to 118 real quick, the James Toney situation, Dana White not pleased. What came out of that? Anything? I mean, anything comments-wise? I remember reading just a quick synopsis of some of his stuff, but did he go off on a rant that ended up all over YouTube at some point?
Oh, Dana, no, actually, he was calm about it. I mean, it was what it was. It was a failed kind of marketing ploy. You know, Tony's been chomping at the bit. He's not going to get any, you know, good boxing matches, so it was a good payday for him. I think it was a way for, you know, Dana White, the ex-boxing team promoter, to come home to Boston and have this big, wacky matchup that would get a lot of media attention, and he had the big fan expo, which was a, you know, incredibly big success, and had some Brazilian jiu-jitsu rolling things, you know, and that was really cool stuff that I hope the UFC continues to do, because it's great. It's great when they go into a community and they do all that sort of stuff, almost WrestleMania-like, and, you know, they can't do it every month because of how much it costs, but it does bring in some good money, too, and you sell a bunch of stuff, so there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. So, you know, that's a lot of good stuff went into it that way, but it's just, it was James Toney being fat and out of shape and not taking it seriously enough to even train at a top gym. I mean, you know, it's been said in The Observer, and it's kind of been a crack, but it's true. You know, even Dave Bautista is training at a top gym. You know, Sean Merriman, football players, they train at top gyms. If you were that serious about it, you know, that you wanted to have any shot whatsoever besides I'm going to knock him out, you know, it was kind of ridiculous. So, you know, it was what it was. Dana didn't go off, and it was a failed experiment. And, you know, on to the next thing. You can say he did his freak show. You know, he's brought in Kimbo. He brought in the guy initially who had beaten Kimbo in one of those underground, the Boston firefighter who got fired for that, the underground fight with Kimbo. He's done this. I mean, he's done some things. You know, they've done some wacky things, obviously not to the level of Strikeforce or anything that's happened in Japan, but, you know, he has put himself out there to do some things, and, you know, this was just a failed one, and he knew it was, and there was no point in going to bash it afterwards. It was just, see, my guy destroyed your guy, quote-unquote, the mainstream guy, in seconds.
And, of course, the promotion coming out of Florida, the wrestling promotion coming out of Florida, what's the latest on that stuff?
Well, just from what I know, Mr. St. Laurent, who was doing, I guess, some of the talent booking and stuff like that, he's out claiming breach of contract. I think he, you know, obviously he's not the only one. I guess there's been a couple other guys who have decided to not wait till January and deal with this sort of stuff for any longer that have pulled out as well. And, you know, again, until, you know, they're trying to put a happy face on it, but just like the Shine fight, which has been a disaster, it's supposed to be taking place, I think, this weekend. Now they moved it from Virginia to Oklahoma City. you know.
Just down the road.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just got to believe it when you see it.
Isn't it fun?
Well, you know, I said from the word go, this thing was going to be a disaster.
if you only did that because there was the name of, you know, Fred Wolfhahn and the New York Mets, and you just hate the Mets that much.
Well, you know something. Here's the deal. When they talked about their turnaround time, it seemed they must have had, I was assuming, well, they must have had everything in place. Of course, they're playing, if there are cards to play, they're playing them close to the vest. So the fact that there is a delay, they're saying, due to the scope of this, and I can appreciate that, you know. I thought they were projecting a turnaround time that was unrealistic to begin with. When I say that, to clarify it a little bit, you know, if I call you and say, hey, I've got a network in place, I've got a production house in place, I've got, on all the T's are crossed, all the I's are dotted, and we're going to war on such and such, then okay, then everything's ready. But if you're, you know, if you don't have a pilot, you don't, you've got nothing to shop, you better have some inside, and that doesn't mean that there's automatically going to be a network available to you or even want you, I didn't think the real, you know, from the time that I heard about this to labor, you know, talking about, what was it, October?
Yeah.
I thought, wow, they've got their ducks in a row, which obviously they didn't or don't. And so they've, you know, something, there's a piece of the puzzle that's not there. So, from that side, if it is indeed legitimate, then I see that, you know, why they're postponing it, and of course, if it's not, it's not, and postponement is just a way of keeping it alive without doing anything. So so the timeline is realistic, is the point I'm getting at. So the rest, will obviously, the story will unfold, and we'll see if it's all bogus or if it's not.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and throw this out there right now. Boise State will be in the national title game at the end of the year.
You know, I have no problem with that. I have absolutely no problem with that.
Well, got through the first half of the my University of Cincinnati game with Fresno State Saturday night and said, enough's enough. Their offensive line was just falling apart. But they said today in the paper here that they had two linemen that were just getting – it was their first game, and they hadn't been on the offensive line for a long time. But anyway, I thought I'd throw that in. But, yeah, Boise State came back pretty strong with VT, didn't they?
I got to tell you, man, that quarterback is just unreal. Very you know who he reminds me of? Just the poise, very much like, you know, a Tom Brady or a Joe Montana, the guy that at the end of the game you want the ball in his hands. He's going to be huge in the NFL.
Yeah, you can blame Boise State for being a big fish in a small pond, and, you know, one of the things that the people hold against Boise State, or really now that they're not the quirky little fun team that plays on the blue field and they're actually a threat, it's, you know, well, they don't play anybody from week to week, and they're going to play this team and this team and this team. And it's, well, yeah, that's true, but they usually slaughter those teams. They beat those teams badly, and the team has become a real magnet for real legitimate football players. I mean, who was the offensive tackle a couple of years ago? Was it Clady? He was the one that in Matt Ryan's draft that I wish Atlanta could somehow go up and get. I think he was with the second pick overall. I think Jake Long may have went first. But, you know, they're getting athletes and they're getting great players up there. And it's, you know, you can't – how can you fault – and I love the ACC, but you know what? When you're playing Maryland, and there's other teams like that too, I mean, there's nuances all over the place, and you can't fault them anymore for not being able to hold up because, you know, they beat Oklahoma with the Statue of Liberty play. You know, they've lost, two games in the last couple of years. I mean – they are a legitimate team now, and they're one you have to take seriously. And it's, again, it's entertaining to see them kind of upset the apple cart in the NCAAs when they definitely need a playoff.
Well, bottom line is, I mean, you cannot fault them for the conference they play in, and just like you can't fault any other team for a conference they play in, similar to Ohio State. You know, let's face it, the Big Ten has not been strong for several years, but yet Ohio State somehow ends up, you know, they earn a shot. You know, granted, I'll give you that, you know, some of those teams, those guys are playing out there in the WAC are not the same caliber maybe, but, you know, I'm still not even sold that the SEC is the strongest conference in college football, you know.
Wait, bite your tongue, Rich Tate.
No, strength of schedule for the last half a decade. They are actually beneath the Big 12. At the end of last year, they were behind the ACC, the Big 12, and the Pac-10. So they can argue about how strong they are and this, that, and the other all they want, but the numbers bear it out. They've had a team in the national title game over and over again. However, that's based on some crazy perception that they are the best conference in football, and they're not. But bottom line, Boise State has tried over and over again, countless times over the years, to change conferences. They are, I believe, next year going to be in the Mountain West, which is a step up, I believe. The Pac-10, they wanted to go to the Pac-10. Did the Pac-10 ask them to come? No. Why? Are they afraid of them? Probably. You know, the thing is, they've also tried to go on the road to play several teams, and one of the guys on the local sports talk stations here recently was saying that Florida declined to accept Boise State coming in on a one-game basis at Gainesville with Boise State coming in.
Not even asking for a home and home. Just one game coming in when you'd make the money.
Yeah. They've gone away from home and home. They've given up on that because they know now that nobody wants to go to Boise, you know, for whatever reason, weather, logistics, this, that, and the other. So they're just now basically saying, okay, screw the home and home. We'll come to your place. And, you know, Virginia Tech took them up on it. You see what happened to them. You know, the bottom line is they play the 8 conference games they've got to play, and then they play 9 conference games after that. And this year they've got, I believe, Oregon State, who's in the top 25, and Virginia Tech, who obviously was in the top 25. So, you know, they've got the same schedule everybody else does. You play the games you have to play, and then you try to play some strong games on your non-conference schedule. And that's what they're doing. And
well, yeah.
How can you continue to keep a team that has been undefeated in regular season play for the last 3 seasons? If they go undefeated again this year, you have to go ahead and finally find a way to put these guys in that game and let them play in Alabama, let them play a Florida or an Ohio State, and see what they're made of.
One thing is they're beating those teams, too, and it's been a slow build. I mean, it would be one thing if it was like, you know, Hawaii with Timmy Chang or Cole Brennan, and you're racking it up, and, you know, it's a gimmicky June Jones offense, you know, God bless, but and it was a one-year wonder sort of thing. You know, but, you know, teams like Navy, too bad Navy couldn't pull it out against Maryland, too. That was really disappointing, even though I struggled liking Maryland for years now. But, you know, Navy, because Navy can be undefeated, too, and they've built something up there, and obviously not even close to the level that Boise State has. But, like you said, how do you deny them after it's been this long? It's not like it's a one-year wonder and it's, oh, my God, they're going to screw everything up. You know, they had to build themselves to get up there for this long. And remember, everybody was bitching and moaning before, well, they can't crack that top 6 plus Notre Dame that, you know, they would require to get them up there. Now they're up there, and people don't like it.
You know, I don't know if you guys are aware of it, but Georgia State University, we'll get a wrestling tie-in with this football conversation here. Georgia State, of course, who owns the facility, the Atlanta City Auditorium, where wrestling was held for, oh, God, 80 years. All right, there we go. There we are with wrestling. Georgia State has a football team, started up, the first game was last Thursday, under the tutelage of Bill Curry, and they won. Now, granted, they're a Division I AA team, all right, or whatever the hell they're calling that these days. They drew 30,000 people to the Georgia Dome.
Jesus.
One AA football, 30,000 people. Let me tell you what happened over at Turner Field. 25,000 people showed up to watch the Braves play the Mets at Turner Field across town.
People in Georgia love college football. And considering I'm around Delaware and, you know, just went through Joe Flacco and, you know, graduated Rich Gannon. Some people take 1AA football seriously, especially when it wins, especially when you have a name that somebody knows. It's almost like when Lefty Griselle went down there,
and he was at Georgia Southern or Valdosta State, wherever he had went to. I mean, people just like coming out for the show sometimes, and, you know, winning in the first time people come out for the show is not bad.
Yep. Hey,
Brian Kelly won his first game as head coach at Notre Dame, too.
Yeah, thank God for that, too, and they didn't look good, but, yes, I'm one of those Notre Dame apologists out there, too, for people that hate Notre Dame.
You're going to get a lot of death threats, aren't you?
That's just, I'm used to them.
Hey,
although, again, if it's Earl, if anybody named Earl, I'm not scared of you.
Earl Campbell. Les, I was going to ask you, what are the Redskins going to look like with Shanahan?
You know what? I don't know. I'm interested to find out. I don't take a lot of stock in preseason games, or none, actually. And, God, I hope they're not going to live and die on the diva Haynesworth's moods, for Christ's sake. That's bad. That whole thing is, I guess they couldn't move him, so they're going to. If he decides that the defense they play will be all right for him to play.
I tell you what, the national media is not. They've kind of come out now with the reports of Shanahan on Saturday, or the quote unquote team sources saying that he was so awful against Arizona that he's not going to start, and that was more of a reason to not start him. And then, like, the national media saying, well, people are in Washington getting a little bit tired of this, and they know Albert's a bum, and they're getting tired of it. No, they're not. Listen to the Sports Junkies on 106.7 The Fan in Washington, or listen to that entire station with Brian Mitchell and LeVar Arrington and, lots of other guys as well. Nobody likes Albert Haynesworth. I mean, Jeff Fisher's been in the league. I think he's still the longest tenured head coach. Would be open to having him back. Donnie McNabb being the good guy that he is, we need Albert to win, and he kind of put his lame attempt out there, but funny how expectations work in Washington, too, with their schedule. It's rough, and to be honest, if I were them, I would rather almost see 7-9, show improvement all the way across the board, and they will. They absolutely will in all aspects of everything, because they're going to be better prepared. Jim Zorn was not a head coach. He was brought in to be an offensive coordinator. He was a quarterback's coach in Seattle, for God's sakes, underneath Mike Holmgren. He didn't have a chance to do a whole lot of anything, and he was thrown into the fire there. So just the organization alone is going to help greatly. We saw this in Atlanta with Jim Mora. It's one of those things where just the improvement's going to be there anyway. I'd rather see them go 7-9, get a good draft pick next year, and then, struggle and be in a mix with a whole bunch of wild card teams, because it's probably going to be a whole bunch of close conference records. I think close divisional records in the NFC. I mean, there's no real standouts in that conference. There's barely any in football, period, that you're expecting to be that great. So why get caught up in that mix? You're going to show improvement anyway. I think some Redskins fans' expectations are a little bit higher than they probably should be.
You know, it's like talking about promotion and showmanship and so forth. The fact that tomorrow night it's Minnesota and the Saints in a rematch of Super Bowl, and then the Cowboys open against the Redskins.
McNabb's third straight game against the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Jets and the Ravens to start the season. I mean, they did matchmaking. There's matchmaking, and this is, this is where the NFL is great. Even greater than that is the Red Zone Channel. God, I love that thing.
I think the most entertainment this season is going to come out of Les's hometown right there, T.O. and Ocho Cinco.
Yeah, and they have. I can get a box of Ocho Cinco flakes here for $2.99 at Kroger's, but I didn't.
That's I. You know what?
Limited
Send
edition.
Me two boxes.
Limited edition. I pay $2.99. I send them to you for $5 plus shipping.
I'd even give you $10. I love Chad Thomas or Chad Ocho Cinco. I mean, the fact that, I'm not out there, so he doesn't seem to be a day-to-day bad distraction. I mean, I know he has had some ups and downs in the last couple of years, but he is good for sports, as he is a colorful personality that is not damaging. Now, the guy lining up on the other side of him, with the VH1 show, the high drama of Terrell Owens, this ought to be good. And I'll say this, the AFC with the Jets defending that, with the Ravens all of a sudden, you know, last dance for Ed Reed and Ray Lewis, and they, you know, all of a sudden they have, you know, a plethora of receivers, and what Cincinnati's got going on, you know, was their defense just an aberration next year, or can they hold it up this year, and are there enough balls to go around up there? The AFC is really exciting, especially the East and the North. You know, so much so we're not even talking about New England.
Yeah, Cincinnati opens with New England. That's going to be an interesting game, too.
That's one of those, it's just like Atlanta and Pittsburgh. It's really going to set the tone for both those teams, I think, for the rest of the season, how they come out and perform. You know, Randy Moss is looking at a contract, too, I would assume.
They're saying that the Patriots' defense is pretty porous. And, of course, I haven't seen them in preseason, you know, and so I couldn't say, but... you know, it'll be interesting to find out and to see if having a depth of receivers is going to do Palmer any favors this year, because man, his terms is in the air. Last year he wasn't productive at all.
Guys, I need
to go. Of course, when they play the Ravens, they got Hurts Gonzalez with the Ravens now, so that should be interesting as well.
I hate to get away from the football talk, but my God. Caroline Wozniacki. Jesus Christ.
What? There's a women's tennis player. What is her name? Caroline Wozniacki. That is a fine one.
Caroline Wozniacki. Yeah, she is one beautiful young lady.
And talented. Number one women's player in the world, I think. So.
Yeah. I mean, you know, she does what Anna Kournikova couldn't do. She can play tennis.
See, and again, not on NXT.
How do you know what Anna could or could not do? Huh?
Albert's just better.
Sally Kaman is an expert. I don't know.
Hey, that's one thing. Women's tennis is always at least able to market itself out. Gabriella Sabatini and Monica Seles. Like, they've had talented and pretty women's tennis players. I guess, are they still a bigger draw than the men? I would assume that they are.
I don't watch the attendance numbers.
You know what? They had the big tournament here in Cincinnati a few weeks ago. My next-door neighbor volunteers as an usher. And then one of my clients at the gym, her husband's a police officer and off-duty. He works security for the Stars. And my client drove them, you know, different places. And now they're hooked on tennis. I've never been a big tennis fan. I really haven't. I've just... tried to play it when I was 13, 14 years old, and
I loved it when I was a kid, and I tried it in my teens, and I just couldn't. I wasn't coordinated enough to make it happen, but I always loved watching it. You know, some of the best tennis I can remember was you know, you're sitting there watching Bjorn Borg and Jimmy Connors and John McEnroe. That era was just amazing tennis. That's the earliest I can remember.
I remember that too, because it kind of went into Yvonne Lendl and Chang and a couple of guys there. I remember Pro Wrestling USA. I remember going up there watching WPIX in New York when I'd go to, you know, visit relatives and stuff like that. And then it would be like one of the only times I ever watched tennis. It was Boris Becker and all those guys who were, I mean, they had a machine going there of media and just had that sport absolutely humming along pretty amazingly. Tennis and golf and your figure skating, I understand because of women and stuff like that, but it's always amazed me that things like tennis and golf and stuff like that has been able to find a niche and find ratings. But I don't know, always been a little bit surprised by that.
Well, you know, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, you know, from things I hear and read over the years, I mean, obviously they go through up and down periods. You know, we know that with golf, you know, with Tiger Woods not playing well or, you know, he misses the cut, ratings are down the rest of the weekend. You know, and it's been that way with golf and tennis, I think, for many years, really, because it is an individual sport. And you know, people have got their favorites. If their favorites aren't making it all the way through, you know, from all accounts, ratings tend to start dipping toward the end, even when the tournament actually matters the most, when it's going to be decided. People just start tuning it out.
Now, by the way, Rich, are you disappointed that Georgia's A.J. Green is going to be suspended for 3 games, being a tech head?
You know, that's ridiculous. That's a bit much. I could see maybe two games for what he did. I think, you know, the NCAA just showing their power here. And, you know, as a Tech fan, I'm sitting there giggling about it. As a college football fan, I'm sitting here, you know, steaming about it because it's just wrong. I think the NCAA held up a lot of teams, you know, this past week. And, you know, technically, I think there's probably still some that are still sitting there with some players kind of on the bubble as to whether or not they can play this weekend. So, as the game's really starting to matter, you know, and it's really a shame. If I understand there's rules made, and if you break them, you know, you got to pay the price. But it just seems like the NCAA comes down heavy-handed in a lot of situations, and I really don't like the way they're kind of holding people hostage right now.
I always hate them for what they did to Maryland basketball back after the Bob Wade era, when Gary Williams took over, and they just it was a death penalty for all intents and purposes, and it was really ridiculous. I wonder how long it's going to be before it's like the NWA, where you just start seeing conferences and teams splinter away from the NCAA because of the power of basketball and football.
I don't know. Can they do that?
They can. I mean, there's no real. I don't see there being a real reason why they could not break away from the NCAAs. I mean, you have your own TV networks. You know, BYU has one. The Pac-10's been talking about it for a while. I know the Mountain West has got one, kind of started up, and that's why it's going to hurt them. Or the WAC did, I guess, which is why it's going to hurt them so bad with Boise State leaving. The ACC has got pretty much their own Jefferson Pilot network that's tied in. ESPN and the SEC now. So, yeah, I mean, I could see that actually happening breaking away. The Big East has got their own or is working on getting their own. So, it could happen. I mean, with the amount of money, why do you need the NCAA?
You know, that would be an interesting thing to happen. I just don't see it ever happening.
Well, I guess there's still the technically the academic side, but as things go on, I can see that slipping further and further away too.
Well, guys, you got anything else before we wrap it up? Want to get any plugs out there?
I'm going to Rhode Island for Bob Evans' Slam Tech weekend of the 25th, and then back to Philly, I think, late November, early December. DJ and I haven't locked the date down yet. And then as far as I know, I'm going to work something out with High Spots to be in L.A. for a Wrestle Reunion in January. And, you know.
See, I told you L.A. was your place, man.
Huh?
I told you earlier, L.A. is your place, man. Go save the business.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Whatever medication you're on, Rich, you need to back off a little bit. Demedicate. But anyway, you know, and then I do a Wrestler's Eye audio with Mike Johnson once a week, and then of course on the weekends we join Mike Sempervisi on the Observer Figure Four Network.
That you do indeed, and I don't want to say anything bad about High Spots, but, you know, twice I've ordered from them, and twice there's been problems.
Oh.
Never ordering from them again. But that doesn't mean anybody else should, because, well, you know, there's other people who haven't had problems, and people love them. So I won't say anything bad about them. Plus, they're going to pay less, Thatcher, which always makes me happy. Unlike the check he gets from the big boss, Brian Alvarez, who sails around on the gold boat now that he's a married man. And those checks will, of course, always bounce, but still, I always work at his website doing the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare when I have the time to now. It's almost painful.
Mike's setting up luncheons at buffets, is he doing a review for the food section of the local newspaper, or what exactly?
Hopefully he'll do a review of Legendary and then actually go back and watch Vision Quest if he had never seen that before. Not that I'm going to talk about
Vision Quest.
I don't know if he has or not. Hopefully he has, but if he hasn't, I want to see he and Vinny do a review of both of those movies, comparing the world of amateur wrestling as best as it could be done by John Cena and Danny Glover. But yeah, it was my big audio nightmare. And, of course, Wrestling Observer live every Sunday on the Sports Byline Radio Network. You can listen in through their website or just listen in through ours, WrestlingObserver.com.
All right, and that's going to do it for us this week. Tell you what, we're going to try to have Bob Evans on. sometime this month. I'm going to reach out to him, and we'll see if we can get him on here. And actually, Les, I'm going to give you a call tomorrow. I'm going to ask you to touch base with somebody.
You are, huh? Okay. Well, you you need catch me after 6:30, or I'm not sure. I'm working a split tomorrow. Sometime you might try the house phone in the afternoon around 2:30.
There we go. All right, okay. We'll do.
All right, I'll just cool. send you a text message. Watch.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Actually, I probably will. Just craps and giggles. All right, that's going to do it. Yeah, that's going to do it here for us tonight. We will, of course, be back next week at 8 o'clock. I want to let everybody know that there will be no Peach State Pandemonium tomorrow night. However, they will return next Thursday. So the next show on tap is next Tuesday, the David Nanger Show. Also want to let everybody know there is a new show coming called Phoning It In. It will be Larry Goodman, and we'll talk a little bit more about that probably next week. And that will focus on the local scene around Georgia as well as the other indies around the southeast, Tennessee, Florida, the Carolinas, and Alabama. And it should be interesting based on who's going to be on that show and some of the stuff I've been hearing about it. So stay tuned for that. More details to come at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.